Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 330th episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your host, Mason, and I'm joined each and every week by Allie. Allie, how you doing?
You know what, Mason? I'm really excited. Obviously, this is only the second time we've done a set review episode, but these are already some of my favorites. I'm very excited for today.
Awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. Set review episodes, like, so I've done podcasting, like, the little thing for a while now, and, like, sometimes it causes people anxiety, you know, because they're like, oh, like, I don't want to get it wrong, or I don't want to waste people's time and talk about a card they've already heard. But I love to hear you're so excited about it. It's an exciting time, right? Like, this is some of the coolest parts of Magic, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Also, I'll definitely get something wrong. It's okay. It cannot be worse than Mason and Oko, though.
That's pretty bad. So, Allie, I don't know if I knew you back when I did this, but I did a podcast on the network called Even Odds with one of my best friends, Trey, locally here. And we're the ones who started the Pick 2 set review, the way we're doing it now. And we always said that we would go back and see who was the most right about cards, right? And we started it when the first Ravnica set came out almost 2 years ago now. So I've restarted listening to the episodes to rank our orders of our cards because I was like, listen, I have the cards all listed here. If something pops up in the last minute, you know, whatever, but we'll know, right? And so we have all of the Ravnica block before we started being on CC to look over. And I have gotten some cards really wrong, Allie. Like, I forgot some of the things I said. I got some stuff super right that a lot of people didn't expect, but I said Rick's Mighty Reveler was potentially legacy playable. Like it. I have gone places, Allie. I'm not afraid to go there. So
oh man. That made me just pull up our episode 322, the Ikoria pick 2, and we had some opinions, huh?
Oh yeah. Well, let's take a second look at that. It sounds kind of fun. This is an impromptu thing. What do we have here? I'm gonna look through what the thing I got most wrong as of right now.
Dirge Bat.
Oh, Dirge. Oh, the Dirge. Dang. Yeah, that one's rough.
Oh, my companion pick was spot on. I said Lurrus and Yorion.
Oh, nice. Whew. Whew, you nailed it. Yeah, I have Karuga and Giganta. So the two other lesser ones.
Yeah, those are still like...
Yeah, they saw,
they like, were played a bit, yeah.
Yeah, they were definitely like 3 and 4. Let's see. I got that you would play Yorion in your main decks. That bared out this weekend. Oh, I put Labyrinth Raptor as a hot take. Whew, that one did not pan out. Surprisingly, the Ozolith has been better than I thought it would be. I did not realize that with Module, it actually doubles the counters, which is insane. I don't know if you've played much, like, Affinity since the Ozolith came out. But, it, like, because the way Module works in Ozolith, it, like, doubles your counters. I didn't know that when I picked it. It's insane.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, my hits were bad. It was a Song of Creation and Inspired Ultimatum. Mm-mm.
Yikes. Yeah. Oof. Ooh, I got Sharknado on the Hopeful. Okay.
Ooh, all right.
Let's see. Did we...
Oh, my God. I guess my hot takes were hot takes, so that's okay. It's okay to get the hot takes wrong.
Yeah. Oh, for your Hopefuls, though, you have Fiend Artisan. That one...
Yeah. Fiend Artisan's a great card.
Yeah. It's so weird where it's like... not dominating, but it's like seeing a healthy amount of play. It's kind of like the perfect rare in some ways, you could say. Did you see the Mardu cycling deck from PT2, I believe?
I played against that.
Okay. That deck was sweet. I like that deck a lot. That's the coolest Fiend Artisan deck I've seen.
Yeah, that was cool.
All right. Well, we're going to have to come back in and check on these again when Zendikar comes out. We'll have to make this like a little thing. I kind of like this. It's cool. Yeah, Song of Creation. Ooh, that I thought that would for sure hit in like modern, like maybe not like hit hard, but like be a deck that was like ugh, and just hasn't
yeah, right.
Really
it seems so like relevant in the early access streamer event too. Like people are just kind of going crazy with it.
Yeah, remember the red cycling enchantment that day one the streamer event, Alejandrazi built, and like everyone was freaking out about it. It was like you cycle and you like go through your whole deck.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that, yeah, because it turns out Teferi stops that card and we all learned that pretty quickly.
Yeah, you just see like any cool card and then you're like, all right, Teferi is still in the format.
It's so real. I was watching a streamer before we did this and she was doing her set review, and there was this really cool creature and it had Flash, and chat was like, yeah, but Teferi. And it was like, God, that's so true. it's like that creature actually just doesn't have Flash. I hope they ban Teferi. Just do it. Get some PR points.
Oof. Need some good PR at some point.
You really do, though, right? So, yeah, we're going to be doing the Pick 2 set review today after this little intro here. For those of you that haven't been around before, there are going to be 5 categories of cards we're going to talk about. That way, each card kind of gets the context that we want to talk about. And instead of having a top 10 list and having y'all infer, or having us specifically say, like, yeah, our number 10 is something we don't really think is going to hit, but we're hopeful for it. We're just going to have categories, and that way we can talk about cards that maybe normally wouldn't get talked about in a set review. And if they would, we at least flame them in the correct context, right? Like, how many times have you listened to, you know, I love Brian and Jerry on Arena Deck List, but, like, they'll have a whole conversation about the card, and at the end of it, they'll say, like, but, I mean, that's, like, a pretty hot take. It probably won't happen. And then they'll move on to the next one. And it's like, oh, I wish I'd known that going in. I was, like, really intent on why you thought, you know, Shark Typhoon was an unplayable card or whatever, you know? It just lets you have a good context. So we're going to be doing that. But before we get to that, we're going to be doing hashtag always improving because, you know, point of the show, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And Allie, how did you improve this week?
Well, I guess I improved by learning there's a hashtag before always improving.
Yeah, we don't use it a whole lot. It's technically out there. If you search Twitter, you'll see it every now and again. We used to do a whole segment of the show where we'd read them out, but...
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think with always improving, I've never done a set review before on my stream, and it was kind of just like an impromptu thing of like, oh, I kind of want to look at what M21 is in its entirety, because it was just like released, like the entire thing was like put out. I'm like, oh, okay, like I know other streamers do set reviews, I've never done one, and kind of just like jumped into it, and it like really like, I don't know, flexed my like magic muscles in a lot of different ways, because I did every card in the set, so I had to kind of like jump into limited, which I'm still like not really fantastic at, so like I really just had to give like first impressions and really think like on my toes about these cards. And that was just like something I've never done before. And I think I feel a lot more comfortable in M21 limited going into the next 2 days than I've ever felt in a limited set before.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. It's such a different experience when you like look at all of the cards there too. And also, if you're trying to like come at them from a positive standpoint, right? Where like it's so easy to be negative on cards, but if you're trying to like look at what could be good with this, you sometimes see stuff that in limited, you like, they're not going to happen in standard, but you can notice for limited, right? And that's just like a huge edge, it feels like.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Is that up on your YouTube channel if someone wanted to go and see you talk about all the cards? Is that something that you like uploaded, or are they going to have to check a VOD history if they wanted to see that?
Right now it's in a VOD on Twitch, but I can definitely throw that up on YouTube as well. I think I need to edit that though, because I played a legacy league in between, so get someone to like cut out the legacy parts of it.
sure, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, that's like the rest of Magic, so it just makes sense. that's awesome. Yeah, we actually have I did like a talk about the card I'm excited about set review, basically, where like I skipped the limited cards because I was like, well, I kind of want to do this, but I don't want to talk about every card.
it was a lot. My throat hurt after that.
It is so much. Like, even when you, like, push past cards sometimes, it's still, like, 45 seconds, whatever, a card, you know? And, like, you do that 90 times, basically, a set. That's, like, you know, a lot of time taken up. So, yeah. My always improving moment was I got to play my first Pro Tour, and...
Yay!
Yeah, it was super exciting. It was super fun. And I worked really hard on what I thought would be expected to be played and what I kind of thought going into that and coming up with sideboard plans and that kind of stuff. Not to toot my own horn, I basically nailed it for my PT. If I had played PT3, I would have got it wrong. But if I was playing PT4, I got the numbers right. So probably definitely some room to improve there, but I was in the right ballpark at least, and they weren't that different. Basically, white, black, Yorion kind of ruined PT3 in a way if you came to predicting it, since no one knew that was coming. But yeah, I was just trying to think about what I thought people would play, what I kind of thought sideboard plans and stuff like that would be, and how I wanted to approach all that stuff. And even though I thought Bant would be really popular. I thought the other decks would help keep Bant down, and I would just kind of take my lickings when it came to playing Bant if I just got paired into it a bunch. And day one, I didn't hit Bant at all. I played against two Teferi decks with Nassif and then someone else on blue-white, but that was like my only Teferi experience day one. And then day two, I hit a Bant, and then I was ready, and I felt really prepared for the sideboard plans and stuff like that. And so I just felt really comfortable going into it. And yeah, I think that's huge. Like, one of the worries I had going into the Pro Tour personally was that I feel like I'm pretty good at getting down what, like, the average player would play. So I feel like when I go into SCGs, I feel really prepared for, like, especially the day one. But, you know, I have a good handle on what's going to be going on day two as well. And that really informs my sideboard decisions, right? And it leads to a lot of, like, X2s into X5s on day twos. And I was worried that maybe that wouldn't translate to the PT, but it was able to go, and I was able to work on that process. And doing that with the two people I worked with the Pro Tour, Jess and Ash, was awesome. So it was a good experience. So...
awesome. Yeah, I saw that you day two'd your first PT, and that's just like really awesome. We can be in a club together now.
Woohoo! We're in it. Yeah, I didn't make the top eight your first PT club. I was 6-1 at one point, and you know, looking back on it, I was like, dang, I was on track. But just like I got.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah. It's actually, I wish I had recorded it from my side too. I played Nassif round 8, and the VOD's up on his channel. And it's a bizarre and very interesting match, especially if you have the information that I had from playing my side about, like, what we both prioritized and stuff. And it was really interesting. So I wish I had, like, saved it and I could have, like, hand-captured my VOD or whatever and talked over it and gone through this stuff. Because it was, like, in game one, Nassif was like, I literally can't lose this game. It's unlosable. And then, like, I worked my way into a position where, like, 3 turns later, he was like, I don't think I can win the game anymore. And, like... it was just a really weird and exciting match. And those are the stuff that I, you know, I want to play Magic to play against people like Nassif and do that kind of stuff and have those awesome experiences. And so, like, getting to do that was awesome and really cool. So, yeah, that is it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right. So, we're going to go into our Pick 2 set review. No Patreon question this week. If you want to support the show, though, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg. We're going to start doing some more stuff for that very soon. Between COVID and everything going on in the world, it kind of, you know, we took a backseat. I believe even at one point on the podcast I said, like, you know, if you're not working and you're a patron, you're going to stay in here. Don't feel like you have to pay. We were trying to be very accommodating, but we're entering the new COVID world and we're going to start doing some more stuff and, you know, doing that. So it's going to be exciting. So expect to hear more about that sooner. And you can also go to our sponsor, Oasis Games, and use code CCMTG to get 4% off every order and 15% off your first order by using hashtag would that be good at checkout. And yeah, it's awesome. You can pick up these cards and have them, and hopefully in the next 5-ish months to 4-ish months we'll be playing in real life again and you'll have these cards super cheap because you're gonna get the scoop right now on the cards. So Allie, today our 5 topics on things we're gonna cover are sleepers, reprints, new prints, hopefuls, and hits. So let's start off with sleeper, and I'll let you go first since you did better at the Pro Tours. Allie, what is your first sleeper?
That's it. All right.
I promise. That was actually going to be my plan going into it. And I knew that I was an underdog. But if I had won, I would know to myself that I got to go first because I did it. It's just so hard to be the top 4.
You even could have gotten second. You didn't even have to win.
I had 2 slots.
Slacker.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't even deserve to talk in this kind of situation. But... as a man, I'm just going to impose myself anyways and keep talking. So, Allie.
I'm not used to that.
What is your first sleeper?
My first sleeper is Baron Talarian Archmage, which is 1 blue-blue, a legendary human wizard. When Baron Talarian Archmage enters the battlefield, return up to 1 other target, creature, or planeswalker to its owner's hand. At the beginning of your end step, if a permanent was put into your hand from the battlefield this turn, draw a card as a 2/2. So yeah, that is a wall of text, but I think this card is really cool. It's only 3 mana. I think we already see a bunch of instances in Standard where we want to kind of like bounce things, reset our planeswalkers, etc., or we can even like do it to the opponent if we're trying to get through with creatures, if we're trying to get rid of a planeswalker so we can like counter it when it comes back down, or something of the sorts. So what I really like about this card is that it's extremely versatile. I probably like it a lot more in Commander, but I think this has some spots in Standard, and I haven't heard a lot of it in conversation, in Constructed at least, non-Commander discussion. So I think it's a sleeper. I think it's super cool. I think 3 mana is just amazing, so.
Yeah. It's funny. I actually had this card as a hit, and I was going to preface it with, like, I'm, like, 98% sure it's a hit, but I put it on my list because no one, like you had said, talked about this card, like, at all when it came to Standard. I, like, listened to some set reviews. I heard no one talk about it, and so I had it there, and then I saw you put it in your sleepers. I'm like, okay, we have it on the podcast. I'm going to switch to the other card because I was really torn between that and another one, and we'll get there later in the show, but I think this card is great. It is reminiscent to, like, the Reflector Mage play pattern, except way more versatile and not as punishing. But, like, a not-as-punishing Reflector Mage with upsides in other ways, I think, is a reasonable trade-off. You know? It's like a Mana War that, if you reset your Narset, is a big game. If you, like, minus your Teferi, unsummon their thing, play your Baron, unsummon the Teferi, in, like, a creature matchup, that's some, like, pretty real, like, you're keeping their board very clear, you're moving through your deck, you're churning. That's some real stuff. Yeah, I think this card's very nice. And obviously, in Commander, I think it looks very, very powerful. There's a lot of really strong things you could do there. But I like this card a lot. I think it's very good.
Oh, yeah. This is... I really hope that it does well. I have other hopefuls that are a little, like, more out there. So definitely put this as... sleeper number one.
I love it. What's your other sleeper?
All right, we got scroll all the way down on the page. All right, my second sleeper is Rada, Heart of Keld. We got one red green, another legendary creature. Love my legendary creatures. She's an elf warrior. As long as it's your turn, Rada, Heart of Keld has first strike. You may look at the top card of your library anytime, and you may play lands from the top of your library. And then you can pay 4 red green, and Rada gets plus X until end of turn, where X is the number of lands you control. She is a 3/3. I obviously like cards with text box.
Yeah. So, words matter, mean, cards.
Yeah, I mean, this is also just like another 3-drop, I think. There's like some Gruul decks in Standard that are just like a couple cards off from really making an impact in the format. I think this is just really great. Just kind of like 3/3 with a ton of upside. Playing lands off the top of your library is helpful. You can even like turn this into kind of like a ramp deck with some of the other cards we see getting printed in the set. So I'm just super excited for this card. And, yeah, first strike is still really good too. You have a lot of things you can do with this card.
Yeah, I really like this card too. It's funny, this card's gonna be on my list later, so I'm not gonna say where, but we're talking about this card again. But I think this card is great. I think, just like you mentioned, like, it works in a ramp deck, and one of the things I thought about this card is, like, sometimes decks have transformational sideboards, and sometimes it's hard for ramp decks to get lower, and so they kind of have to do weird things, like maybe play negates as their lower spells as a way to interact. But if you're playing like I'm trying to get to Ugin deck, you can sideboard some of these in. You're going to have lots of land, so you're going to have pseudo card advantage, right, by drawing ish a card off the top every time. And then this thing's a mana sink too in the late game. Like, it attacks for 9 if you have the bare minimum of mana to pump it, right? So it kind of fills a versatile role of, like, yeah, I can play in aggro decks, but also, like, if you're trying to play like a more like go long deck, this is a very sick pivot. Like, how many times does your opponent keep in their early creature removal against an Ugin deck? I'll give you a hint, it's not often. So, like, I think this card is really powerful in that sense. And I don't know, I feel like the look at your top of your library thing, even when it doesn't hit a land, is such, it's just so helpful, right? Like, how many times, Alec, have you thought, like, all right, if I draw Embercleave, I'm definitely going to win. But if I, like, drew a creature, I would much rather not attack this turn. What am I supposed to do? And then suddenly you're just like, oh, I'm going to draw a Gruul Spellbreaker. Okay, I'll play with that information. And the fact that it isn't open like Courser, I think, is also pretty big. So I really like Rada. I think this card is great.
Yeah, those are really good points as well. I agree.
Yeah, this card. Whew. Also, the art. It's
Oh
great.
yeah. Oh yeah, that's some
Awesome.
good art. We have some really good art in the set, so I'm very excited.
Yeah, the art is just kind of on point, you know? And there's a bunch of different art styles too, from like the newer, like a little more cartoony to like that one kind of reminds me of like an older-ish Magic card, not like Alpha Beta, but like OG Zendikar era, you know? Like it's just really
Yeah.
cool diversity of art. I love that kind of stuff. So it's awesome. Do you have anything else you want to say on Rada? I mean, we're gonna talk about her again later, so I didn't want to dive too deep, but
No, that's good.
awesome. All right, well, my first sleeper is Gadrock, the Crown Scourge. For two and a red legendary creature dragon. Apparently, we only pick legendary creatures around these parts. You get a 5/4 flyer. Gadrock, the Crown Scourge, cannot attack unless you control four or more artifacts. At the beginning of your end step, create a treasure token for each non-token creature that died this turn. So Gadrock is this really big overcosted creature for very cheap mana, but you have to play a bunch of artifacts or be some get with some way to generate a bunch of artifacts when to play Gadrock. And when I was first thinking about this card, I thought about a different light, and then I was talking to you and you were like, oh, you can just put this in Jun food, and then like it the cat oven will generate a treasure every turn, and then you get the treasures, and then once you have the treasures, this thing can attack. But also, like the treasures, you sacrifice stuff, you have Korvald in play, you move through your deck and cast the spells you get with Korvald. And it's like, oh my goodness, this card just like actually completely and utterly dominates the battlefield because it's a flying 5/4, and while it can't attack, it can block. And while you're working towards getting your, you know, 3 mana 5/4 to attack, it's okay if it has to wait a turn if it holds literally the entire game back. Like, very few things attack through this. So I think this card is great. It seems like an easy slot in Jun Food, and there are things you can do in Modern and Pioneer and Historic when it comes to like artifacts type decks, you know, like Tempered Steel and that kind of stuff. But, you know, just without even going too deep, I think on its value, the Cat Oven plus Gadrock synergy is just, whew, it's a lot.
Oh yeah, I am very excited about this card. I was surprised to like not hear that many people talking about this card. Maybe it's just because I'm always trying to fit different things into different sacrifice decks. Obviously that didn't work with a lot of my ideas for Ikoria, but I mean, if we're looking at this set, I think this is just so good in those decks. I don't know, like it's just a 3 mana 5/4. You get so many things to sacrifice. I'm just repeating literally everything you said, but like you just have to activate it, Cat Oven twice, and you can attack with this.
Yeah, also it sacrifices the cat oven and makes two artifacts, which like okay, that's not like I'm not over the moon, but Allie, what if I told you I had like a Mayhem Devil in play and I did that and I pinged something and then I played another Gadrock and then at end of turn I got, well, because I got two foods from the sack and then I get a treasure from the token from the other Gadrock dying, right? Because this doesn't need to be on the battlefield to see it. Now I'm at three. I can also sacrifice that treasure to ping instantly if I want to. I can sacrifice those treasures to eat the food to ping more stuff. Like, okay, that's a lot, but also like legendary cards get stuck in your hand. You know, that's something that can happen with these kind of decks. And I don't know. I also with Jun Food, like, how many times have you been playing and you just haven't drawn the cat, right? And your opponent has a bunch of kill spells and you're like, okay, I have four or five foods lying around for whenever I draw this cat and Mayhem Devil. I'm gonna start pinging you like crazy, and suddenly Gadrock's like, "Hello, I am here, attack!" Like it just happens a lot. So.
Yeah, I think that's just easily I they serve different functions, but this is still a 3-drop. It can take the place of Midnight Reaper depending on just kind of what the format looks like. People are already cutting Midnight Reaper, so like different like when things die, do X. And if we're not very concerned about card advantage in the Jun package, which we're less so than Rakdos because we already have various different draw engines, I think this is just like a slam dunk in that spot.
Yeah, I agree. Also, I imagine this card was designed around the time Mox Opal got banned. Because, wow, can you imagine playing this with Mox Opal in Modern? Like, obviously, the Urza stuff was crazy, right? But, like, pretend that wasn't real for a second. As, like, an aggro deck. Like,
I'm here for it.
that would just be. It's just so big. Just so big. I don't know. All right. My other sleeper card, sorry, is Selfless Savior. It's a white for a dog 1/1 creature. It has no text box, because I would never sacrifice this. But if you were heartless, you could sacrifice the selfless savior dog, and another target creature you control gains indestructible until end of turn. I would never sacrifice the dog, but if you wanted to, you would have this kind of cheap creature that reminds me a lot of Alcied and Dauntless Bodyguard. But unlike Alcied, doesn't cost mana, and unlike Dauntless Bodyguard, can come down before your bigger creatures. And we see a lot of stuff that's kind of like this white go wide deck between Glorious Anthem and the new white Planeswalker that I believe's name is Kastri Burke. If I'm wrong, I'm so sorry. And yeah, this kind of thing fits into that deck. Also, I'm still kind of a believer that you can play Lurrus, whether that's in a deck or as your companion. And this card and Lurrus are like low-key best friends. Just my Lurrus is indestructible. Okay, you need two kill spells. All right. Or maybe you have a sacrifice deck and like, all right, Death Dweller, bring back this and my priest. And now my priest is indestructible. Just a lot of things you can do with the Selfless Savior. I think this card is, it's not like busted, but it's just like good.
Yeah, the problem is, though, is like you can't actually sacrifice it because it's a good doggo.
Exactly, yeah. It really is kind of like a morality test, right? Like, how much are you willing to throw away for power and success and stuff like that?
Never trust anyone who sacrifices the doggo.
Yeah. But in some ways, that makes Selfless Savior the best dog ever because we just know who we can't trust anymore. So it's a powerful tool, you know?
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Also, the dogs low-key have a couple of good cards, like this and, I don't know, Pack Leader, if you have read that, it's the Lord, but, like, when dogs attack, they don't take combat damage, which for, like, a creature-based Lord seems really strong to me. I don't know, these dogs have a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I imagine being very terrified of that if it ever, like, becomes a deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if there are some good doggos, it could be good. All right, well, next up we have reprints, and I guess we'll just kind of snake here. First up for my reprints, I have Cultivate. So this is 2 and a green for a sorcery. You search your library for up to 2 basic lands, reveal those, put one on the battlefield tapped and the other in your hand, and then shuffle your library. Cultivate is just kind of this classic ramp card. We've seen it in the past. It's always been reasonable, never truly that busted, and enables, you know, green to be like a tricolor deck pretty easily. In between this and the Triomes, and we know the Temples and Fabled Passages are going to be here. We're going to have, you know, 3-color decks pretty easily, and it's ramp that, like, Uro is really good because Uro wins the game, but sometimes Uro doesn't always ramp you, right? Like, sometimes you do just kind of use it as a cycle, and while this isn't better than Uro, it works really well with Uro, and kind of makes that card have a really big power spike, right? Like, if you're cultivating on 3, and then Uroing on 4, and you have, like, enough mana for another 3-drop, and you have, like, the guaranteed land off the Uro. So, I think Cultivate's just a really powerful card, and it's going to see a lot of play, I think, not only in this format, but potentially Historic, and maybe Pioneer. You have this plus this Pilgrimage, that's a lot of ramp. Maybe there's something you can do there, I'm not sure, but yeah, I think Cultivate's just great.
Yeah, I think this is a really good reprint. I think it's going to impact Standard a lot. It's going to be the next ramp card that we complain about. Because, I mean, it is just, like, very good at what it does. And it's enabling, like, you to keep hitting your land drops in the following turn. It just, like, sets you up really well. And I think it's going to be a staple in any kind of deck that's doing ramp, both in Standard and Historic.
Yep. I am excited to sloth and to cultivate and to something. I don't know. Maybe I'll play Nissa. Maybe I'll live a little crazy. No, but yeah, I think that card is just good. The Green Divination. And now that I had that hyperbolic statement out of the way, let's move on to the next card. Scavenging Ooze. Scavenging Ooze is 1 and a green for a creature ooze. It's a 2/2. And Scavenging Ooze has the ability of pay a green and you exile a target card from a graveyard. If it was a creature, you put a +1/+1 counter on Scavenging Ooze and you gain 1 life. We've seen Scavenging Ooze originally be a commander card, then got reprinted in, I believe, Core 2013 or 2014, somewhere in there. And it was just a totally reasonable and good role player. And with Escape being a very powerful mechanic, as we've seen from Uro, Scavenging Ooze does it all, right? When you have extra mana laying around, it eats the card, so when they do find the Uro, it's hard to bring it back. If they slam the Uro on 3, well, you're probably not going to get it on 4, because I have Scavenging Ooze on the board on 2. So we see Scavenging Ooze just be this kind of great role player cards, really awesome to have, and a great one to also have in Historic, which I think we both really like, so I keep bringing up.
I love Historic.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a statement that I don't really do that often. I don't really like making definitive statements because there's always just, I don't know, opinion and stuff. But I think Scavenging Ooze is just probably the best graveyard hate card that they could have printed into this specific standard. I think Scavenging Ooze is fantastic. I'm so happy with this reprint. I didn't want to just like piggyback off of like you saying Scavenging Ooze is a great reprint, but I just think this card is fantastic, and I think it's going to be amazing to have in Standard and Historic.
I agree. One last thing to say on Scavenging Ooze from like a design standpoint is what I love about Scavenging Ooze is that it's like soft graveyard hate, right? Like it takes a lot of mana to answer something, but it's also just like a totally reasonable two drop, right? Like your green creature like beatdown deck would be interested in something that like could use your extra mana laying around, and that's why you see cards like Scavenging Ooze be so powerful and so potent, because even though they're not as strong as cards like Rest in Peace, you can main deck them, and that's just a huge different dynamic. So I think if you were to replace this as Rest in Peace in Standard, it would actually be less effective. Like Rest in Peace in the games that came down would hit hard, but Scooze is going to kind of affect Uro decks more, in my opinion. So that's kind of it. Allie, what are your reprints?
The first reprint that I was super excited for was Containment Priest. We have one and a white flash. If a non-token creature would enter the battlefield and it wasn't cast, exile it instead. It's a 2/2. Granted, I'm not like super excited for this in like Standard or Historic or anything, but I think this is a card that's been missing from Modern for such a long time. I think this card is fantastic. It deals with just so many things that have been really like kind of difficult to deal with, right? Like I'm specifically thinking about things like Dredge. Like Dredge is super resilient towards almost every kind of graveyard hate, and this kind of seems like just a way to answer that, or answer like Neo brand, especially in a color that doesn't necessarily have a ton of access. Like sure, there's like Rest in Peace, but that doesn't do, it's not as like diverse as like this can stop Neo brand, this can stop humans off of Aether Vial, this can stop etc etc, and it's a human, so you can even play it in your humans deck if you want to.
Yeah, I'm curious if human players are gonna board that in against each other. Like if you're on the play, you know, you're just like really on the play. They're like, activate my vial, you're like, in response, flash
this in response. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if it's necessarily like a mirror match card, but like humans players definitely have to be like cognizant of this potentially like screwing them over as well.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in that, and we're gonna have to get Dylan when he's not streaming the worst card game to give us his opinion on that.
He's actually streaming TFT right now, so it's okay.
Okay, oh thank God. I by the way, no, thank pause. I saw you tried TFT on Twitter. Did you like it?
Yeah, it's still just like hard. Like I don't know. I don't know any of the characters, and a lot of the like themes just kind of like seem like they're the same thing. Like what's the difference between a sorcerer and a Star Guardian? Because I just like I don't know what those things are. Or sure, well, I guess I don't know what a Star Guardian is. And then there were like other things that kind of sounded similar. I'm like, well, I don't know the characters. I don't know like who they are, like etc. Then I just ended up playing more Dota.
Sure, that's fair. It's funny because like Star Guardian's like a skin thing. It's not even like a game thing. Like it's like you have to buy cosmetics to get there, which is cool they're doing that. But whatever, we need to move on to the magic cards. But okay, I was curious if you liked it or not. All right. So what's your other cards? I mean, Containment Priest is amazing. There's not much more that needs to be said about that.
Yeah. I guess I will just like quickly say, like, it was originally printed in a Commander set, so it's just been a staple sideboard card of Legacy for a while. I know people in my stream were, like, talking about really dirty things to do in Modern with it, like, more of a proactive thing, like blinking stuff with,
Oh, yeah, Eldrazi Displacer.
Eldrazi Displacer. I'm like, y'all need to chill. That's rude. Like, yeah. Let this just be a good sideboard card. Don't get this card banned or something, because we need it.
White-Black Taxes players are always looking for a card. They're like, one day our deck will maybe be playable. And here they are with Containment Priest. Like, I could put this in my main deck. It's like Scavenging Ooze, but for people that are, like, crazy about it.
Yeah, it's like those crazy people still trying to play a Tarmogoyf in Modern.
Yeah, that, I mean...
For those of you that don't get the joke, it's me. I'm the Tarmogoyf person.
You're the Tarma girl.
Yeah.
Okay. Technically a joke. This didn't hit like one. What's your other card?
Yeah, my second reprint that I really like. There were a ton of reprints that I was a fan of, but I think I really like Massacre Worm. And I've really just been thinking of this because it feels like there's finally an answer that Mono Black or even like any black deck in Historic has to deal with Field of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've been playing a lot of Mono Black in Historic, and it's at least like up there. And a lot of like those kind of decks sometimes just like lose to Field of the Dead. Sure, like sometimes you can get there with Gray Merchant before they kill you, but I don't know. I really like Massacre Worm. I think it's just like a solid reprint too, because the price is absurd in Commander. So that's just a good reprint, like money wise. If we're talking about like money, though, check out that Grim Tutor. But
yeah.
Oh, I didn't read Massacre Worm.
I was going to say, I hadn't even had the joke set up for if you're not a magic boomer, what is Massacre Worm?
All right. Magic Boomer Massacre Worm. It's a 3BBB. It's a worm. And when Massacre Worm enters the battlefield, creatures your opponents control get -2/-2 until end of turn. Whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, that player loses 2 life. So it is like 2 separate triggers. Or like what? Like one's an ETB trigger, and then the other one's kind of just like a triggered ability of the card. So you can actually like respond to it. I know me and Emma were playing, and she bounced my Massacre Worm with the -2/-2 trigger on the stack, so she didn't end up losing the life. But oof. It was rough.
But that sounds not fun. Yeah, this card's interesting. I like it in the context that you said of Historic. And in Standard, I think once Massacre Girl's gone, this might be something that bigger black decks might want to do. And looks like a card they put in the set in case Field of the Dead got too good near the end. So,
yeah,
you know, kind of an odd one out. But yeah, it apparently is also super expensive, which I just didn't know. Not as expensive as Grim Tutor, which you point out, which was like $100 before. But
oh, it was like $200.
Oh, was it really? Oh,
yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. The bad one.
Yikes. Well, it's going to be a bulk rare soon. Oh, yikes. I feel bad for anyone who bought that. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, in the attempts of snaking around, Allie, what is your first new print card that you're really excited about?
All right, let's see. My first one is Bastry's Lieutenant. It's 3W, a human knight. Vigilance. Protection from multicolored. Love protection from Teferi. Anyway, when Bastry's Lieutenant enters the battlefield, put a 1/1 counter on target creature you control, and whenever Bastry's Lieutenant or another creature you control dies, if it had a 1/1 counter on it, create a 2/2 knight creature with vigilance. I obviously like a ton of cards. Oh, it's a 3/4, by the way. I obviously like cards with text box and... Yeah, I don't know. I, like, originally read this card, and it's really hard to, like, think of some of these cards kind of in the abstract because there is an established standard format. It's not going to shake up, like, too much until rotation, but I definitely see, like, all these, like, white cards that are being printed are actually, like, kind of impactful. I've really liked some of the white cards, which has not been the case for, like, a year or two. So I envision some kind of either a mono white deck or maybe like a knights deck. Like knights is really close to having like one or two cards that really pushes it forward. And I think this card's just very good. It has a lot of text, which means it does a lot of things. And until Teferi rotates, it has protection from Teferi, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, that's so true, especially on cards that like kind of need to sit around for a little bit to do something, right? This card also seems really good with the new Winding Constrictor. I believe it's Conclave Mentor. So that's kind of cool, right? Like, you'd have a deck with a lot of +1/+1 counters, and those creatures die, and you're sad because you put all the counters on them, but now you get knights, and, you know, woohoo, I can attack with those. So, yeah, it seems like a very interesting, powerful card. It wasn't one that caught my eye on first pass, but I'm going to definitely keep my eye on that one. Definitely also if I'm looking to build around Conclave Mentor, so... I like that card.
Yeah, I think anything that just kind of like it does something when it enters, and then also has some kind of recovery from board wipes, which is really important in these creature decks, which I envision this going into. So it's something I like. It's something like kind of new as well.
Yeah, it also seems really good. Like, if you're at a board stall, suddenly it's so hard for them to attack, right? Like, any trade's no longer a trade, right? Like,
yeah.
And all your multicolor creatures also, like, the first one gets eaten for free or chumped for free. Like, oof, it's going to be a hard time. what's your other card?
So, after that card, another new card that I really like is See the Truth, which is one in a blue, a sorcery. Look at the top three cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom in any order. If this spell was cast from anywhere other than your hand, put each of those cards into your hand.
Pog!
I like to draw three. I don't know about you, Mason, but this definitely seems just like it can... When I first read this on my stream, I was just thinking of different ways to enable this, and obviously less good in standard, but I mean, even in standard, maybe we can see like an Izzet spell slinging deck and we play Light Up the Stage into See the Truth, and then it's just Light Up the Stage, which is already card advantage, and we draw three.
Yeah, it works good with the Shonda three as well, right?
Yeah, so I can definitely see this in some capacity in standard in a blue-red deck. That would be super cool. There's a lot of cool prowess cards, and I love prowess, so very hopeful for that. Outside of that, we have, like, Snapcaster Mage in Modern. We have Jace VP in Pioneer. I think there's just, like, a ton of ways to enable this. And if you don't even want to enable it, it's literally just, like, an anticipate.
Yeah, it's cool that... I'm going to say, I really liked Anticipate in the past. It's never quite been good enough. But now it's like, okay, if your deck was in the market for Anticipate and you have some way to recur this card, maybe this is something you want to look at. And even if that's not the case, just seeing like, okay, how strong can we make Anticipate? Because that's kind of like a very fair cantrip-y card selection card. Can we like push it a little bit so that the blue players get, you know, a tool or something? And yeah, that's cool. I'm a little hesitant when it comes to standard, but also maybe, like, we don't know what the blocks are past Zendikar, right? Like, we could be going to Graveyard World, for all we know. And in Graveyard World, there's a bunch of flashback abilities where they reprint Snapcaster Mage. Like, that card could be printed in standard right now, and it'd be good, but it wouldn't be unbeatable. Probably because
the page around. Yeah, I'd be fine with the Snapcaster reprint. Like, who cares?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, sure, you're going to flashback your 3-mana bolt. Like, okay, cool. Like, we don't have efficient spells. But yeah, I'm very interested to see how that one goes. That one's really cool to me, and it fits your kind of criteria, as you point out, of Mike. All the cards I pick have a lot of words on them, and this one's like Anticipate with more words, so it fits the theme of yours. I really like that. Is there anything else you wanted to say on this card? I forgot what it's called. I keep thinking of it as Flashback Anticipate in my head, even though that's like totally not what it is.
It's See the Truth, which just looking at our Facebook thing, I accidentally wrote that twice for hopeful. So I got a solution, just giving you a heads up, though.
Word, I'm glad to see. I didn't even notice that in the moment. So I must have seen the truth the whole time.
Ooh.
So for my new prints, I'm going to start off with the first one. And Allie, I have one-upped you on the text box with this card, Sublime Epiphany. It is four blue for an instant. I'm going to call this a Zoomer command, by the way. It has choose one or more. You can counter target spell. You can counter target activated ability or triggered ability. Return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. Create a token that's a copy of target creature you control. Target player draws a card. So it's like, it can be cryptic command. It can, you know, plus, right? Like, counter your thing, draw a card. Unsummon your thing, make a token copy of this thing. Like, it can do all of those sort of things. And it's 6 mana, so it's a lot in standard, and Teferi makes it so this card isn't playable right now. But I'm kind of looking for the future when it comes to that. And really what has me excited this card is that this kind of card isn't really normally playable. And cards like Torrential Gearhawk aren't normally playable, but I kind of like to play with those cards every now and again. Like, that's kind of fun to do on occasion. And in Pioneer, this plus Torrential Gearhawk lets you kind of loop it for a little bit, Because even though it's templated where you return something to your hand and then you create a token copy, the rules committee has said that the way it works, I don't know the exact wording, it's not going to try, is, but basically you can unsummon your Gearhulk and make a copy of Gearhulk, and it like still works even though Gearhulk wasn't there upon the resolution of that part. So you can like counter your thing. I'm going to draw a card, unsummon my Gearhulk, get my Gearhulk into play, cast my draw spell that was in my graveyard, draw two, and now I have another Gearhulk to cast this thing again. I'll unsummon it again upon resolution, and doing that kind of stuff is super fun for me. And so I think in Standard it might have a chance to do something, and in Pioneer it kind of has some meme potential. But also, like, this card is really powerful. Like, if there's a world where you can play this card is low-key backbreaking at times, right? Like, counter your Hydroid Crisis, counter the trigger on your Hydroid Crisis, draw a card, make a token copy of, like, my Baneslayer Angel, where, you know, something like that, and then just, like, hit you for a lot on the next turn. It just seems like a card that has a lot of power and has all the keywords, all the abilities, so it's Zoomer Command in my head. Do you have any thoughts on that card? I know a lot of people don't like it. No, this is a hot one.
Yeah. I mean, like, you can, like, I see people saying, like, oh, you can only really, like, cheat the mana with Reclamation, but I don't even know if that's what this card is for. Like, this card just screams blue-white control to me, and, like, I don't really think blue-white control cares about having a six drop in their deck that does this many things. Like, you can kind of just, like, get to the point where you want to be casting this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like, I'm a fan of it. I don't, like, inherently see where it goes outside of blue-white control initially, but it would be really cool to see this. I'm, like, this card just screams something that I'm going to complain about in a couple months.
Yeah, yeah. I tried to play my really cool dinosaur from Zendikar, and they bounced it, and they countered the next spell I played after it, and they made a token copy of their Baneslayer. Just like, ugh.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really strong, and at a certain point, having enough words in a card will push a card to be considered, and this, you know, is definitely towing that line, in my opinion. My next card is less controversial. It is Village Rites. Black instant. As additional cost to cast this card, sacrifice a creature, draw two cards. So we've seen this kind of card in the past a lot. We've seen Altar Reap and things of that nature, but they've always been two mana, for the most part been a sorcery, and so they've been limited to just actually limited play. Like, it's something you can do to, you know, kind of move through your deck and have that sort of option available to you. But at one mana, instant speed, it's now like a counter spell for kill spells. It lets you block and sacrifice something in combat and move through your deck. This card just seems very strong to me and looks like really push, like, okay. I talked earlier about how, like, they want to push anticipate. Like, okay, if we push Altar Reap, how strong is it at one mana, at instant speed? Like, this seems really strong. So, we talked about Fiend Artisan, right, last set, where it's like, well, thank goodness this is sorcery speed to activate, because if it was instant speed, it'd be so annoying to play against. And Altar Reap is not exactly that, but in some ways better, because it's just a mana, so. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I was instantly, like, really happy to see this card when it was printed. Just, like, very... Yeah, I mean, like you've said, we've just seen, like, a lot of things that do something similar, but this is actually just one mana to draw a card. Like, do you know that Rakdos Sacrifice wants to do that? And it's like, I don't know. It just seems like a really good card advantage way in decks that are already kind of interested in sacrificing their creatures. So I'm interested in this. I think this could actually see Constructed play.
Yeah, I think it's very likely that at least for the first week or so, we're going to see this card in Rakdos decks. If not even maybe Jund decks. You know, that deck's kind of tight right now. Maybe that's a more post-rotation thing, because we lose, like, 12 cards from the Jund Sacrifice deck, but we keep the rest, so who knows. But yeah, this card just seems strong to me.
Oh, yeah.
Alright, so now we're going to move on to Hopefuls, and I'll start things off on the Hopeful here with Conclave Mentor. It is green and white for a 2/2 creature Centaur Cleric. If one or more +1/+1 counters would be put on a creature you control, put that many counters plus one additional counter onto that creature instead. When Conclave Mentor dies, you gain life equal to its power. So it's the Selesnya Winding Constrictor. We've seen Winding Constrictor be a card that saw a good amount of standard play. You know, in combination with, there were a lot of +1/+1 counter cards, but we see a bunch of them in this set, and I can only assume going forward as well. And for older formats too, you now have the option of, hey, if you want to play a hardened scales deck, but you want to play with white cards instead of black cards, that's now a thing that's open to you. And that opens up a lot of really cool doors. Maybe you want to play Abzan. I kind of doubt that because of mana reasons. Normally these decks are lower to the ground. But it opens those doors. And in standard, it doesn't put an additional plus one, an additional counter on things like energy, like Winding Constrictor does. But I think the fact that when it dies, you gain life equal to its power, on average, will be better. Since, you know, standard's much more about the battlefield historically. And if you, like, trade something off, like, you attack this in, it trades with their, like, five drop or whatever, and you gain, like, 3 to 4 life. That's really impactful, and a lot more impactful than gaining, you know, an additional energy or something like that a fair amount of the time. So I think this card's just really good.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've seen a lot of these types of cards be successful in the past, and I think this set really supports green-white counters, where we've maybe seen, like, more support in green-black counters before in the past. So I'm really excited to see what comes of this. We can even tie this into, like, other cards, like the Ozolith you mentioned at the beginning of this. Maybe we see, like, a green-white counters deck, and that's just pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a great point. Another card is Loxodon, right? If you go one drop this, you know, Loxodon, we've seen that be a winning strategy in the past. And now your Loxodon is, like, getting a lot more value. And that's only on two creatures, right? So,
and then they all turn into knights with the Bastry's Lieutenant when they die. It's all coming together.
It's a combo. You have Unbreakable Formation. There's a new Unbreakable Formation that doesn't give Indestructible but costs a mana less. So there's a lot of things you could do when it comes to this plus one counter theme. Yeah. And Unlimited also just seems, oof, like all your cards are so much better.
Oh, yeah.
My other hopeful card was Rada, which was the red-green legendary we talked about at the top of the show. We look at your top card. I don't have a whole lot more to say, except I am a big believer in this card, and I think it is surprisingly versatile for a card that looks aggressively slanted. I do think it's going to show up in way more spots than just red-green attack you deck. So I'm going to be interested to see if that actually plays out. But I think in a normal standard environment, when I think about the past, I would see this card in, like, every red-green deck. So.
Yep, I think the card's very good.
Allie, what is your first hopeful?
So, like I said, I messed up earlier, but swapping everything around, I think my hopeful, scrolling up, is Mengara the Diplomat. It's 3 and a white... lifelink, another legendary creature. Whenever an opponent attacks with creatures, if 2 or more of those creatures are attacking you and or planeswalkers you control, draw a card. Whenever an opponent casts their second spell each turn, draw a card. I originally had this card in my hit section, but I think hopeful comes from it doesn't, like, necessarily have a home in the current standard, so I'm really hopeful some kind of white deck comes out of the cards being released now / rotation in the future. I think this card is just, like, super cool. Just, this is, like I said before, just, like, these white cards are actually getting spells and creatures that do things. Like, it combats people attacking you or casting spells. Like, you're just getting back this card advantage that white typically does not have. So, I mean, unfortunately, it's, like, another 4-drop, so maybe, like, all these 4-drops don't belong in the same deck together, but definitely seems like it can be the top end of maybe an aggressive mono white deck. We can, like, regain some card advantage at some point, or maybe just even in the mirror. Like, if you're facing down an aggro match, people are attacking you, this dude's got lifelink, so you're gaining life and you're drawing cards. So I don't know, I'm a big fan of this card, and I'm hopeful because it doesn't apparently have a spot in the current standard, so I'm just hopeful there becomes a spot for him.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel that. I also think this card seems really great out of the sideboards, right, of, like, maybe more controlling decks. Like, okay, I don't have any creatures, main deck, you sideboard out your stuff, you're still, like, an aggressively slanted deck, and then, boom, I drop my 2/4 lifelink that, like, moves through my deck as long as you're trying to do stuff. So, I think this card's great. I'm also really hopeful for this card. And also, it's a new era for white cards, right? Like, we don't... Maybe in Zendikar, there's a bunch of white cards that if you're attacking with stuff, you're going to be drawing cards. And that changes the color pie and the color balance a lot. So, super exciting.
Oh, yeah.
What's your other hopeful?
All right. My other hopeful is all the way down here. It's Vito, Thorn of the Dusk Rose, which is 2 and a black. Another legendary creature. I love my legends. Whenever you gain life, target opponent loses that much life. And then you can pay 3 black-black. Creatures you control gain lifelink until end of turn. And so 1/3. So I've already mentioned that I'm a huge fan of the mono black deck in Historic. And I think this is a spot there. I am more so hopeful of this card in Standard because there seems like a lot of like incidental life gain or other cards that otherwise like synergize very well with something like this that isn't explored too much in this current Standard because there's never been something in this Standard quite like this card, like benefits you for gaining life. So maybe we see some kind of like life gain deck. I also in Historic today played against Mono White Soul Sisters, so maybe that just changes to Orzhov because this card is absurd in that deck. And I don't know, I'm very hopeful for this. If not in Standard, I think this is just a slam dunk in Historic.
Yeah, I'm having it's funny, someone actually posted this in like a local Magic group today and they were like, this card is unbeatable. And I was like, can you explain? in the context of Standard. And I'm a little hesitant when it comes to Standard with what I currently know. But I could totally see a world where this is good. And yeah, in Historic, like you talked about, there's a lot of stuff where that sort of thing kind of matters. And you just get a lot of value, for lack of a better term, out of it, you know?
Yeah, it definitely at the very least seems like it's giving the mono white deck in Historic a win con. Like, sure, you can make a huge, like, Ajani's Pride Mage or whatever it is, but, like, that gets chump blocked for eternity, and then you're just sitting there at 78 life, not doing anything. And this one, if you get to 78 life, your opponent's just dead.
It's so funny to hear you talk about that, because I've played so much Mono White in Historic before Ikoria, and I literally just had, like, an 80% win rate, and winning was, like, so easy. And now, like, Historic is just so different. It's just, like, a completely different format from the Anthology and Ikoria and soon-to-be M20 and Jumpstart as well. It's just so wild to think that just a little bit ago, like, that just wasn't a problem. It's like, yeah, I'll just get a Healer Hawk to be, like, a 6-6, and I'll attack you a couple times. You'll die. Like, I don't know. It's wild. Things change. It'll be interesting.
Are we going to do a Jumpstart set review?
We could. Do you want to do a Jumpstart? It'd have to be specifically for Historic. Maybe that could
be. I mean,
like
we're super into Historic. We can decide that later, but.
Yeah, I'm down for it. I mean, that sounds like a fun time. We could talk about Bolt and Reanimate and Path and Exhume and Time to Feed.
Oh, wait.
Dang it. Time to Feed. I needed that for my green white life gain deck. I will say I'm glad they upgraded that card. I don't know. Did you see the list today of the upgraded ones or the exchanges?
No.
Yeah, they posted today what the 20 cards replacing them are going to be, and a bunch of them are like Bolt turn into Lightning Strike and like slightly less efficient ones. But for the ones that were kind of weird, they upgraded them. Like Time to Feed became Prey Upon. You know, just like a better version of that card. So that was cool. But
oh, sweet.
Yeah, you know, I guess we'll talk about that if we do a Jumpstart set review. Let us know if you want to hear a Jumpstart thing for specifically Historic. If anything, that can definitely just be a Patreon question if that's something that someone wants. We can talk about our favorite cards.
Yeah.
Is that it for your hopefuls? That was both, right? Sorry, I had a moment. Okay, awesome. Well, do you want to segue right into hits? Our cards that we think are going to make a big impact on Standard or some format.
Oh, yeah. My first hit is Teferi, Master of Time. 2 blue-blue static ability. You may activate loyalty abilities of Teferi, Master of Time. On any player's turn at any time, you can cast an instant. +1. Draw a card, then discard a card. -3. Target creature you don't control phases out. -10. Take 2 extra turns after this one. And he starts at 3 loyalty. So, I actually think this is kind of weird. I put this on the hit category because I think this is like very good and is going to see play in multiple formats. But I especially like this card and think it's going to be great because I don't think it's overpowered.
Yeah, it was funny that you said it was a hit because in my mind, it's like, I think I even tweeted, like, can we call this one Tough Fairy because it's so fair? Like, it reads unfair and it reads really flashy, but I'm unsure if it actually plays out that way in, like, a traditional deck, you know?
Yeah. I think overall, like, I think this card is probably going to be, like, see play. I'm probably in a bunch of different decks in Standard. I see this being just another thing to do in, like, Nexus of Fate decks in Historic. In Commander, this card is stupid and should probably just be banned because it's like in multiplayer, it's absurd. But
is that true?
Like, I mean, you get to take it up like four times.
Sure. I guess it ultimates very quickly. Sure, I forgot about that part, but yeah, that's fair. That is pretty annoying. All right, sorry. Continue.
I mean, I do also see this like card being kind of annoying in a competitive formats as well because it is activating at instant speed both on your turn and your opponent's turn. But I mean, overall, this just seems like a good and solid planeswalker, which we've not seen from Teferi's before. They're always just broken.
Yeah, Teferi for whatever this one, Teferi. I think this one really is fair. I think it's going to see a decent amount of play. And there are things that you can do to make this card, like, work to make the discard a card not so much of a drawback, right? Like, if it's in an Uro deck, then it's fueling the Uro. Or if you play, like, there's some cards that come back from the graveyard in this set. You can play those. And the Phoenixes, you know, like, you play an Arcane Phoenix deck with this card. And so I think there's some really cool things this Teferi does. I'm going to be really shocked if this one has the impact that the last two did. Like, really shocked.
Oh, yeah.
But
I don't know. You doubted Oko, so.
I mean, I for what it's worth, I also doubted Teferi 3. So everyone was so high on Teferi 3.
Oh, man. Mason's doubting this one. Everyone buy him out right now.
Apparently. Yeah, I said that one is good if you have something to back it up with to actually make use of the static ability. I did not think about everything that would end up happening. But whatever.
we'll back and find a tweet on 3 Teferi now, like I found from you and Oko.
I can find that easily. I'm pretty sure I tweeted something along the lines of, like, you know you can play to the battlefield, right? It goes to one loyalty. How was I supposed to know they were going to make no good one drops for, like, a year? For, like, a year we haven't... We still, like, Selfless Savior is, like, the best one we have in this set. But, like, there's, like, nothing that plays to the battlefield in an aggressive manner. Like, it's so frustrating on some level. I don't play those decks. All right. What is your other hit, Allie?
My other one I really liked is Necromentia. It's one black sorcery. Choose a card name other than a basic land card name. Search target opponent's graveyard, hand, library for any number of cards with that name and exile them. That player shuffles their library, then creates a 2/2 black zombie creature token for each card exiled from their hand this way. So this has just been a card that's been printed in a bunch of different iterations in the past. Like, we see Lost Legacy, we see the blue one.
Unmoored Ego?
Unmoored Ego, and just, like, stuff like that. And I think this is just, like, so much better than any of those because your opponent doesn't get to draw a card. This is just, like, so absurdly good. I don't know. I feel like this is just going to... Like, sure, like, those cards haven't seen a ton of play, but they definitely saw play in Standard, so any card to beat, like, a combo deck is going to want to play this. Any deck in Historic will probably play this over Unmoored Ego. It just seems like such an upgrade from that. I think this card is going to be very good. Like, I think people underestimate how impactful drawing a card is in Magic.
Okay. I definitely think it's good. I also think it matters a lot on the kind of deck you are casting it. Because I think giving them a 2/2 varies drastically in power level depending on the kind of deck you're playing. Like, if you were playing a mono black deck that played Lost Legacy, like on turn four, for example, right? Like, you went 1-2 and then like double spell where like a powerful three drop, and then you cast it to like take their Ulamogs or their Wraths or, you know, whatever the card you had to answer was, letting them draw a card was definitely bad, but like, you know, you were still able to like initiate your plan, and giving them potentially 2/2 seems kind of strong to me, but maybe I'm just wrong on that. I don't know. This one seems one where it's like, if I'm playing a bunch of blue and black controlling cards, I'm like, whatever, take some 2/2s, you know? And then if I'm like trying to beat down with this card, I'm like, oh no, they got 2/2s, you know? Like, that's like actually enough to trade with some of my creatures. So it's definitely strong, though. It's going to see a bunch of play. No doubt.
2/2 don't scare me.
You're no scared of 2/2s?
Oh no. Not scared of a 2/2.
You're so brave. I'm such a coward. I'm over here living in fear of a bear. Oh my goodness. But yeah, if cards like Ugin are giving you trouble, it's nice to have access to things like this. And I think they've done a good job of always giving us one of these, and they always have like an interesting drawback in some way, you know, or some interesting angle to them. So I'm glad we have another one, since we're about to lose on Mordigo. On to the last two hits from my list.
Yeah, what are yours?
I'm gonna hit us with the softball first, then I'll go into the hot take-ish one second. My first hit is Ugin, the Spirit Dragon. For 8 mana, you get a Ugin Planeswalker that has 7 loyalty. For +2, Ugin the Spirit Dragon deals 3 damage to any target. Minus X, exile each permanent with converted mana cost X or less than the chosen number that has one or more colors. So basically, colorless stuff survives. And then minus 10, you gain 7 life, draw 7 cards, then put up to 7 permanents from your hand on the battlefield. I know that we've had a big influx in players because of Arena, and those players haven't played against Ugin before. So they've heard stuff, and they might be thinking, like, is this really that good? It's 8 mana. I promise you, when Ugin hits the battlefield, it is so unrealistic to win after they untap with an Ugin if you're playing any sort of traditional strategy. Like, things like Nexus, sure, you can go over the top and, like, interact in a different way. But if you're trying to, like, play to the battlefield, Ugin is a nigh unbeatable house. And it's 8 mana, and hopefully we'll be allowed to play counter spells in this format after the next 3 months. But, wow, this card is strong. Like, I don't have a lot to say except that, like, the first time I played this back in Fate Reforged Standard, I put it in my Abzan deck, and I was like, this seems kind of good. I opened two of them at pre-release, and I was like, I want to try playing with this card, and I played it against my opponent, and I was like, -4. And then, like, they played a creature, and I was like, oh, I can just bolt it. I'll bolt it, and I'll bolt it. And then, oh, they played a big one. I'll minus, and I'll bolt. And then it was just like, oh, you literally can't win. And if they, like, had no board, it's just like, oh, bolt, you draw a bunch of cards, you lose. Like, it's just so powerful. I don't know. I don't have anything else to say. This card is insanely strong. It is just so good.
Yeah, everyone who has not had the displeasure of playing against Anubian, I wish y'all luck in Standard, because that's going to be what we see in Standard for a while.
Yeah, if it wasn't for decks like Wilderness Reclamation, which somehow they're going to not ban Wilderness because of Ugin, it feels like, but like, there's just, if you get to Ugin, it is so hard to lose the game. It just really is. Also, with like Nissa, you get there sooner. Nissa makes colorless lands, Allie. Those lands don't have a color. Like, no. You just like clear the board and hit them for like 6.
Yeah, you still just have all your G's.
Yeah, and then like if you're on the Nissa mirror and you play your Ugin first, you're just like, maybe bolt kill your Nissa or bolt kill one of your lands, attack my lands into your Nissa. You know, just like, oh my goodness.
Such, yeah, definitely. A strong card. Gross.
All right. My other one is a little bit more out there. I've seen a little bit of talk from it, but I am a real believer in this card. And that is Silver Smote Ghoul, I believe is how you say it. It's 2 and a black for a creature zombie vampire, which is a weirdly potent creature type, for a 3/1. At the beginning of your end step, if you gain 3 or more life this turn, return Silver Smote Ghoul from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. And you pay 1 to black and sacrifice Silver Smote Ghoul to draw a card. So, in Standard, probably not going to do very much. There's a couple cards that have, like, this gain 3 life theme. Yeah. If you play Uro, you have, like, a self-mill deck, you could, like, bring these back. Okay, that's kind of cool, whatever. You move on to Pioneer. There's, like, okay, there's that Dredgeless Dredge deck that was really cool. And I loved playing it. It was a lot of fun. And you can bring this thing back with, you know, when you hit a Creeping Chill, right? Like, you mill yourself a bunch, you hit a Creeping Chill, ooh, boom, it comes back. It triggers your Prize Amalgams. Bam, that's really cool. And, like, you know, you got that draw ability to move through your deck if you want to. But in Modern Dredge, this thing seems so powerful. Not only do you have the Creeping Chill, like we talked about, as a way to bring this thing back, but the one in the black to sack it to draw a card is sack to dredge. And suddenly you're dredging at instant speed. You have a way to move through your deck. This card just seems very potent to me. And there's always a card on my list that I kind of ends up picking a hit for Eternal formats. And this one seems like the most low-key one that I've seen in a while that I'm almost positive is going to hit. So this card just seems great to me. I am curious to see what you think.
I mean, you make a lot of good points. I probably wouldn't have originally thought of this as a hit. I definitely want to open like a million of these in limited, I'd say, but
bring them back.
Yeah, I mean, I think the card is fine. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't.
No, you don't have to.
I don't know.
You can have a different or not have much to say on it. That's totally reasonable. I think we're going to play Modern eventually again one day for stakes, and we're going to play against Dredge players, and they're going to have this card adopted in their deck in some number. And yeah, it's just strong. And also, I think weirdly being a 3-mana 3/1 against like cards like Rest in Peace is low-key kind of nice, because you just have some like built-in, like, oh, if your whole plan is Mulligan to Rest in Peace, I have like, you know, not much on one, but on two I can play like a 2/1, and on three I play a 3x, you know, between this Surprise Amalgam, and I just have some like poopy beatdown, you know. So I don't know, this card just seems very strong to me. It's going to move through your deck very quickly, and it gives you that mid-game burst of an extra dredge that we saw from Faithless Looting in the past, that this is kind of being a half step for. So I'm very excited to see this card.
I forget the rest of dredges are like a bunch of stinkers anyway, so this is likely just an upgrade in a lot of like the random stuff that you see in dredge.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that is it for the M21 set review. Allie, this was a lot of fun. This set's so exciting, and I'm so excited to play with this set in just 2 days from the time of this recording.
Yeah, I'm super excited to explore this set some more.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Allie, if someone wants to find you, where can they go? Where can they go to watch you play this, talk to you about this, et cetera, et cetera?
Can go to twitter.com. You can find me at mythicmebo or twitch.tv/mythic_mebo.
You can find me on twitch.tv/themasonclark, and you can find me on Twitter at masonclark. Thank you all so much for hanging out this week, and we'll see y'all next week for another episode of Constructed Criticism.